Hey everyone, I'm Jay.
I'm Sophia.
And I'm Scott, and welcome to Witches Betwixt.
Today we're going to be talking about balancing the mundane and magical. So I guess kind of like a little bit of like our own Harry Potter story situation where, Harry has to constantly manage, the fact that he grew up in the Muggle world, but, he's also in the magical world too. So, that's kind of like what we're talking about today. And that could really encompass anything, like your workplace, your school, your family, friends, whatever those mundane things may be, or maybe they're also magical. We're kind of like talking about the intersection between those two things, and if we intersect them at all, or if we keep them separate. So just to kind of talk about how each of us individually balance, kind of like living a double life, because when you're a witch, it kind of feels that way. So I can actually kind of start the discussion on this because I feel like I live in a constant state of this. So before, like very early on in my practice, I kept my mundane life and my magical life very separate because I was still really closeted about my craft and what I was studying and learning. So my craft was very much hidden. It was almost not a part of my life. It was the, after school when the sun would be down and my parents went to bed kind of thing. So that was what it was initially, but now I'm a lot different. I'm almost completely different. My mundane and magical life are pretty intertwined in the sense that I'll kind of like jot things. Like I bring my grimoire to work with me sometimes because it just looks like a very plain black notebook. And if things get a little slow or something, I'll kind of like write some notes down or things that I was thinking of, or I'll read all kinds of occult books on the bus. So that kind of blends the two there. And I also work on Pagan Pride and Witches Betwixt stuff when I'm at work too. Like if I have a couple minutes to set aside to like check a social media account or make a post or something like that. So in that sense, they're intertwined because I'm constantly thinking about all these things all day at the same time. But they're not intertwined in the sense of like I'm 100% out to everyone. Like at my work, I don't let on that I practice witchcraft. Only a couple of my coworkers know that because I went over to her house to deal with something that was going on there, and Scott actually went with me to that. So I'm out in that sense, like, just to the people that I really trust, and they haven't really said anything. So. But in that regard, I keep it separate. I'm very, I guess, picky and choosy now about where I choose to be out and what level of out that I am. And then sometimes on the other end of things, like not necessarily about being out or not out, it's the idea of like, well, if someone's bothering me at my job, like should I like draw up a sigil and keep it somewhere on my desk and just kind of pass it off as like a doodle, or like how much magical influence do I want to have in my workplace in this kind of like really mundane sort of experience. And sometimes I struggle with that because I don't really want to out myself, but I still want some kind of like magical solution for what's going on. So it's just kind of a delicate balance for me. And that's just within the realm of work. And I'll kind of just like stop there. Like, that's the first thing that I talk about is like the workplace versus like your mundane workplace versus your magical workplace.
Yeah, I kind of have a complete opposite experience to that because like I never have ever tried to hide the fact that I'm a witch. Like I wear my pentagram 24/7. People ask me about it, I'll tell them I'm a pagan, I'm a witch, but approach people about it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't talk to my employer and be like, hey, I'm pagan, or like put myself out there like that. I also talk about witchcraft surprisingly little with people who don't practice it themselves, because I've like kind of had issues where in friendships or stuff where I can talk about witchcraft so much all the time that it can almost come across like somebody's preaching a religion at you, and that can make people a little bit uncomfortable. So it was like a little bit of a learning exercise and balancing that. So now I'm kind of at a place where it's like, if you know me, you know what I do and what my thoughts are, and anybody's welcome to ask me about it, and I'll give them a straight answer. But I've never had to actually like hide it, right? Although that might explain part of like my employment issues.
I mean, for me, I haven't been employed in a minute. I think it's been about 2 years now. But previously I was employed for 5 years, and that, you know, I wasn't at a cult shop prior to the 5 years, and like a year before that even. But at the pet store I was at, I was actually pretty outspoken, mostly because the environment was really toxic, and I don't think I would have lasted as long there if I didn't blatantly like use my witchcraft as like magical armor around me every shift that I was there. Like, you know, and so many times, like, I've had bosses walk in on me in the break room on my lunch, like flipping tarot cards. Ironically, you know, it'd be like, I remember one time it was one of the cool bosses and I was doing tarot, and I was specifically like doing the managers that were there that day because I knew they liked to talk about people at this particular place, and I wanted to know what they were talking about. And I'm a witch, so I can do that. And I felt really bad because as he walked in and said hi to me getting a soda, I was reading his termination, which happened the following shift that week. And I felt really bad. But anyway, you know, like, I mean, it was really, like, I never hid it. I actually kind of like to talk about it. I try not to be preachy, like Sophia said, because it can come off that way, especially when you get excited about it.
Yeah, but, it definitely can.
Yeah, me too. But I try my hardest, because I've done that to myself, you know, like, where you kind of foot and mouth, where you do too much and people start like, why does he talk about it all the time? Like, doesn't he have any other interests besides, you know, occultism? And of course, yes, but I particularly get very excited about occultism. I kind of, it's funny because I don't know, I guess for me, I have to have witchcraft 100% with me all of the time. And that's not to say, like, you know, that I'm constantly thinking about it just personally or even ambiently, but, you know, wearing an amulet that I've charged, or my pentacle. I think I've worn a pentacle every day since junior year of high school. Yeah. So, and before that, I was wearing this really beautiful Celtic cross of an Irish folk saint who was a hermit who had visions. And I wore his cross because I had that early on. I think I was like 12 years old when I got that. And that was when my psychic abilities started really showing. So I was like, cool, you know, which is anyway, I could go off on a tangent on that. But anyway, yeah, I guess I need my witchcraft with me. It's the ground that I walk on. And not to mention too, I think I walk throughout my entire life, I have walked 1 foot in the material world and 1 foot in the world of the metaphysical, you know.
Same.
You know, and I think I don't know. I guess that's why, you know, for me, like, so, like, I mean, even just walking down the street, like, Darian was reminiscing one evening, me and him were walking, taking our evening walk that we like to do sometimes, and we kept hearing a footsteps behind us. And I think this was last August, I believe. And it was actually thanks to Darian. He's very good with folklore and mythology. And he says, "Babe, just do me a favor and just step aside. And when you do, say with me something along the lines of 'you can go first,' something like that." And we did that. And as I turned around and I said it, I could see this very small shape on the ground, because we kept hearing footsteps behind us, and I could see a very small shape just walking behind us. And he filled me in. It was some form of a yokai of some kind. A yokai, for those who don't know, is a Japanese spirit, of a sort. And that's how you kind of treat that particular yokai. You have to move aside and let them go in front of you, or they follow you forever. And yeah, but that, just to show you, we were just going for a walk. We weren't talking about magic. We weren't talking about spirits. We were probably, I think he was probably nerding out about Pokemon or something, or I don't know, something abridged or whatever. I don't know. So I don't know. I guess it's just 100% part of my life all the time.
I feel that though. And also, like, I have mixed feelings on it. Like, on the one hand, I do carry it with me all the time, like having the pentagram on. Like, I wear this thing 24/7. I do not take it off to shower. I do not take it off to sleep. Like, the only circumstance in which my pentagram is removed from me is I have to remove it for an x-ray, maybe. Yeah, that would be a reason. Or if the chain breaks. That's usually the only two reasons I've ever had to remove it for. But at the same time, I very much don't like that shit just follows me. Like, while you were given that story, I'm just over here shaking my head, because, like, my bedroom door will rattle at nighttime. Like, shit just gets flung around, moves around. Like, I get annoyed by the fact that sometimes I can't not live a life that's saturated in the weird, you know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, I can get up and banish it, but it always feels like it's inevitable. Something else is going to keep coming on in. And, like, people just around me will casually notice it. Like, my roommate came into my room the other day because he was, like, grabbing dishes or something. And my laptop just turned on and started playing what I was listening to on YouTube to him, which just so happened to be the Corpus Hermeticum. So he's, like, picking up dishes, and all of a sudden my laptop starts blasting fucking arcane knowledge at him in, like, a creepy way, and, like, I got all these occult paintings up, and he was just, like, it was really charged. It was a lot to be in that space, you know. I had to get Nika to come, like, turn the laptop off for me. I'm like, I get it, like, I kind of live in that space, and it's, like, a little bit much sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many different angles to the discussion. How do you balance normal life and magic? Sometimes that discussion can be, like, what we were talking about earlier, like, how do you not overwhelm people with too much magic discussion? And sometimes the conversation looks like, what do you do when you got way too much paranormal shit going on and you need it to stop to let you live your fucking life, you know? Or maybe the conversation looks like, how do you go about taking breaks from the weird? And, like, what do you do to structure your magic to real life balance? Like, it's a very nuanced conversation. And on this one, very specifically, I want it to be a discussion, and I really want to start posting the discussion threads on the group chat. But this one especially, I'm going to go out of the way to make sure it happens, because it is an immensely personal discussion. And I want to drive home, before we really dive into this, there's no right single answer here, and there's no single right perspective. There are going to be as many ways to approach and look at this conversation as there are people who to approach it, and that's okay. Your answers aren't going to look like other people's, because I know our religious episode was a little bit controversial to some people who disagreed, but that was, like, the point. You were allowed to disagree. We wanted to hear your differences, right? So by no means take any of this to be like, here's what you do, but just kind of our looks at our struggles and difficulties and challenges of working at kind of occupying that middle ground, because as we all know, too much of either will be the death of you.
I mean, but you, I mean, Sophia, you joked about it once, and I still think it was very spot on about how me, you, and Jay are kind of like these very different shades of this particular topic. You know, you have Jay, who's kind of like, it's very divided, and, you know, you guys see all this stuff, and, you know, he's just starting to feel things or whatever, you know, and then there's you, who's like, Raj, drive, like, running me ragged, and then there's me, like, I talked to a nice fairy today, you know, like, you know, and
it's true,
you know, but I think that those experiences are significant, because, like you said, this is incredibly personal. Like, I remember, how, like, when I was a young little psychic kid, I think actually before the witchcraft, maybe. I remember one time they wouldn't let me sleep. Like, I my thing was the dead growing up. I saw the dead a lot. And they would, like, be around my bed and stuff and asking me to, like, talk to, like, they would give me faces and I would hear, like, 1,000 names all at once, and I would feel a whole bunch of emotions, and it was scary. And I remember one time I was watching a TV show. It was called Psychic Kids. It got canceled because people were like, they're exploiting children, which whatever. But one of the psychics on the show gave, like, a really cool, I don't know, something that they said just really stuck with me. And one day, like, I stood up for myself. And I remember I was just like, none of you could do this anymore. I have to sleep. When it's bedtime, I go to sleep and you have to leave. And when I wake up, if I want to talk to you, I will. And all of a sudden it was like, whew. And I meant it. And it was like, little did I know, right, that was like an act of will and magic, right? But it worked. And ever since then, I mean, I don't get me wrong. Like, I have experiences like Sophia where, you know, things come break through my wards and I get attacked, and it happens to Darian, and it just gets crazy. But yeah, it's different. I have, even from Sophia, I have a different experience.
Whew. Yeah, I'm going to actually take a little segue from that. When you mentioned when things break through your wards, I kind of don't set up wards the same way that you do. I recently saw the movie Parasite, and without any really big spoilers, there's a quote from a main character. Is that the best plan is no plan. That way, if things don't work out the way you had hoped, that's okay, because you didn't plan for it. And it's the only plan that can really work out. Fuck, was that like a sledgehammer to my chest? Because that's like how I deal with everything in my goddamn life. Oh, it'll be okay. I can just adapt to whatever happens if I don't have any expectations, right? So I do that with magic.
That is the opposite of how I function.
Fuck,
when
I know.
I did see that movie, and when I heard that, when I heard the line, I was like, ugh. Like, it made me feel terrible inside. I was like, oh no.
Did you think of me when you heard that quote?
I actually did, and then I really did. I did think of you, and then I was like, wow, that's like Sophia's kind of like jam. That's like her outlook.
That's how I survive, though. That's how I survive, right? So, yeah. Like, I kind of have that outlook to magic where it's like, well, fuck it, I could put up barriers and shit, but that's maintenance. I know at the end of the day, I can 1v1 anything that comes at me. So you really want to jump through my wards. You really want to fuck with me. You want to rattle my door at 3 a.m. Let's go, motherfucker. I will throw down if you really want to fuck with me. But I'm not going to put up too many wards. So it kind of creates this attitude of like, nothing really fucks with me too much, but like things like poke me to let me know that they're there, and if I ever get mad enough to yell at them, they just stop real quick. And if something's actually pushing me and I get my fucking hackles up, oh, they will disappear for like weeks and not even come back. Like, I will fucking cut a ghost if I have to. Like, it's
cut a ghost. Ectoplasmic blade.
I don't even need to do a banishing. I can just fucking get really mad and direct energy at them and yell and like just use the sheer force of will to push them the fuck out, and I can do it. So I kind of don't necessarily put up a lot of words, and I guess it's a little bit to my detriment because shit comes around me and there's other people around me. And it's like, I guess not everybody's used to being in like a fucking psychic boxing gym 24/7.
I have some wards in place that I've like actually put out and, you know, put power into, but I think I subconsciously have more ward. I feel like I subconsciously create wards for myself, like on my own person, that I think it makes things difficult to come through, but it also makes it difficult for me to project outward all at the same time. It's almost like too strong of a lock.
Mm-hmm. Maybe like that giant wall that you put up.
Yeah.
yeah, I feel that.
Yeah, that's me in a nutshell. But yeah, that's just kind of been my experience, like with wards and stuff. But yeah, I think definitely most of the warding that I do is more subconscious. I actually think I do magic in my sleep, and I don't know if this is a controversial topic or not.
Let's do a full episode on it then, because this is something I've been planning on writing a thesis. A lot of really good magic, actually. This is going to be fucking controversial, but when you've been practicing for years and years and years, sometimes your best results are just only enacted at the thought level. And you don't even get time to put it into a fucking ritual before it happens. And that can start happening. And I really try not to talk about it too much, because it's kind of like the golden goose, you know, like if you're getting your results manifesting while you're trying to write the spell for it, it's like you're on a good path, right? You're getting that synchronicity, right? But
I'm sorry to interrupt. I don't actually know how controversial that would be. That's actually a big discussion right now.
Is it really?
Matt Warren and Devin Hunter were talking about that on Facebook a month or two ago.
Okay.
About because Matt was talking about there are two traditions, one tradition and one sort of system of magic. Christopher Penzack's system of magic, he created instantaneous magic, in which it discusses this very thing. And Lori Cabot, the official witch of Salem, quote unquote, although it's not even quote unquote, because that's literally her moniker. She, in the Cabot tradition, she teaches a form of instantaneous magic as well, which once again discusses this very topic. And they were talking about it too, this idea of thought creates this, like, just you, like, it's to the point to where sometimes you could be like, you know what? Tomorrow I'm going to cast a spell for this thing that's happening, and all of a sudden, come tomorrow, you don't even need to do it because your will just went boop and you manifested it in 2 seconds.
That happens a lot to me.
That's most of my magic, if I'm being blatantly honest. I can do deliberate stuff. If something doesn't want to shift around really easy at the thought level, I can pull the tools out and sit down and do a ritual. But most of my really good shit is just starting to get my vibes up and letting it click together and happen while I'm doing that. And I don't even need to throw down the big ritual. And sometimes if I have to throw down a big ritual and I'm still getting resistance, it's like a note to step back and look at what I'm trying to manifest and whether it's actually beneficial, part of my true will, or if it's really just me kind of fucking around on some stuff that is not necessarily the brightest idea. Because we all get on our own shit sometimes. We all get down a fucking rabbit hole. We all have worn a fucking tinfoil hat at one point or another, and that's okay, you know? Mm-hmm. But you gotta check yourself, right?
I actually just had a manifestation moment as well recently, with the situation happening here. I solved a legal sort of I made it happen really fast, and it wasn't supposed to, and now money is coming in that either could have not and may have taken months happened in days.
Good stuff.
Yeah, see, for me, like, especially when it comes to warding and stuff, that's why I say a lot of it's done subconsciously, because I often have dreams that, like, things are coming in or at me or in my space, and I'm, like, building barriers to keep whatever it is away, you know, monsters, whatever it may be. I also have this constant dream of like lava coming up the stairs. I've had it ever since I was a kid, like lava slowly coming up the stairs, and it's me building barriers and climbing higher, and the lava one in particular I'm never really successful with. That's the one that always gets me. But in other dreams, like I build life. Barriers perhaps. Which I find interesting because Joyce often has dreams of things like chasing after them or like attacking them and stuff like that. So I think it's interesting that like Joyce has those more, dangerous dreams, and mine are just like very methodical and like, okay, something's coming, build a barrier kind of thing.
I kind of got to the point in my dreams where if it's like, something like that, like lava, I'm gonna get fucking roasted alive, right? But if it's like a demon or something coming at me, my witch mode engages and I'm like, let's fucking go, and I like fight that bitch in my dream. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
I gotta say, I'm sorry, Jay.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
I'm just actually surprised where this particular topic is going, only because like when you first introduced this topic, Jay, I really thought it was actually going to be like about like almost sort of like when to be skeptical, sort of like that's almost kind of where my brain thought it was going to go, like, when to be magical and when to be skeptical.
Yeah, that was kind of my original intention, and then Sophia made another suggestion, but I think it all kind of wrapped up into one topic anyway.
I like it.
I was gonna say, and I still want to dive into that, right? I still want to do that whole balancing thing. I want to talk about fate, like I was gonna talk about, because this is a really multifaceted gem of a conversation, and I want to like hit all the angles on it that we can, you know.
So maybe we should dive into, because Scott brought it up, the skepticism part. You know, when to be a skeptic, and maybe like when to be a skeptic, when to use your brain and just be like, no, that's fucking science. And, you know, when to be like, yep, that's some magic shit.
I'm going to dive in all the fucking time. You should always be using your rational, logic-based brain first and looking for the most reasonable explanation for your outcome. Because God damn it, you can get your ass blown away in the wind if you are not grounded enough to actually discern for reasonable results. And you will let any little thing that blows you any which fucking way carry you off into nothing. Like, I remember we had that post or that group that we were talking about, which is Learning Corner, that banned me over that post with...
the candle.
Yeah, with the candle, where a girl took like a piece of paper, lit it on fire, and tossed it into like a puddle of wax, and lo and behold, it fucking stayed on fire, because that's how a candle wick works. You had a part of it that wasn't covered in wax, it didn't suffocate the flame, it naturally works as a flame source, of course. But she wanted to like derive some kind of greater meaning for this. The real meaning came down to, she had done something and wanted to extrapolate meaning from nothing, which is like a little tough to do. If she had like done this as a method that she had practiced and developed, that'd be different, right? But just, she was trying to like take every little possible thing that happened as like some type of divine nod or message. Right. And I think that's where you kind of start looking for specks of gold in the sand next to the river. You know what I mean? Like, you're looking for something that maybe has little bits, but you're thinking that every other grain that you turn over is going to have gold underneath it, and it leads to a tragedy, right? And I feel like it's super duper duper easy to just get clusterfucked away if you don't have that hard rational grounding view. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, fuck, I could rant on that for a whole episode. Someone take the mic away from me.
Well, this... I mean...
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm so sorry.
Go ahead, Scott.
Okay.
We've been doing that this whole... I think we're still in a Mercury retrograde during this recording, so this might explain all the...
Our audio quality is great, and we've only done two of those, and normally we have a lot more, so they can get it out.
Very true.
But I mean, like, that's what I was saying at the beginning of this, when we first started recording. I think, well, actually, before we recorded, I said, TikTok, being on TikTok has given me a lot to think about. And I laughed because it's exactly what Sophia was saying. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of people looking for omens and things, like, you know, people, their candle shatters, you know, and all of a sudden they want to be like, oh, that was someone fighting back against me, you know, and I'm like, or the wick was offset in the candle and it overheated the glass and it shattered, you know.
Exactly.
And it's things like that, like, you know, also too, Jay, well, Sophia, you know this as well. I'm big on omens. I mean, I'm a huge, we know this, I'm an animist. So, you know, natural omens are a part of my.
You are. You're literally like, you're like a movie character, like, good omen, bad omen.
I'm kind of like that too, though, IRL.
But the thing is like, the thing is, the reason that I can rely on it is because I've trained myself to know what is an omen and what isn't. Like, for instance, the other day I heard a crow, but every once in a while start coming like spring and fall around here. There's somewhere, I think there's either in the one of the parks near my house, larger parks. And I think that they live somewhere over there, but I have to remember that they have migratory patterns. And I've learned that, you know, just because they suddenly appear out of nowhere, doesn't necessarily mean that it's an omen. You know what I mean? When, you know, for me anyway, the way that I determine an omen is I become, in that moment, I become very aware of my body and what I'm feeling. An omen will come with the feeling. It's not a perplexed feeling. You don't feel confused or like, put it this way. If you have to go online and say, what does it mean that this paper that was calf covered in wax is still burning? Like, if you have to ask, it's not an omen. An omen is like almost like a prophecy or a vision. Like, it happens, you know it happened. It's like having a paranormal experience. Like, no one could tell you what you experienced didn't just happen. You totally saw that 18th century lady walking through the wall. You know, like, you know you saw it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is what an omen.
Can I give you an example of a
good
omen,
please.
I had? We were, I was at like a solidarity march, and a red-tailed hawk flew over us and like soared very slowly over our circle and then perched right next to us and watched us for a while. That's a good omen, and you can just feel it. And you like, the big thing was how it grabbed my attention. And I was so enwrapped in it, like I was ignoring the speech and everything just to like focus on this hawk. That's an omen. Right? Like,
right.
Something that may seem like a small detail, but just envelops you completely.
Yes.
Sorry, please continue.
I mean, you did it. That exactly is an omen and a portent, respectively. Although you would probably more want omens. Although omens could be either good or bad, but portents are exclusively like, you know, you're going to die.
interesting.
Yeah, portents are always bad. At least according to the, like, the proper definition. But anyway... But that's, you know, and that's, I find that it's these young people that, but I think I was like that when I first started too. I think I wanted to find magic in everything, you know, and now I try to debunk everything, you know, first. Another experience I just had, I order from, these aren't magical candles. They're just really nice, scented candles. They're, from a place in Salem called Witch City Wicks, and their candles are pure cotton wicks, so there's no metal fiber in the wick, and the wax is soy. And the other day I was burning it, and it did something that generally, from my knowledge, can't happen without the metal fiber or whatever's in the wick. It popped white, really bright, like, and there was like this bright white light, and there was smoke, and I was like, and at first I was like, oh, it's just the metal fiber in the wick, it's not a sign, because generally speaking, that could be a sign that's it's Victorian,
and English, and I was like, okay. But then I realized the candle that it was, and I was like, pure cotton wick, soy wax. So I was like, there's no reason for that to have happened, at least to my knowledge. And so I wondered if that may have been actually something, but once again, I wasn't even sure. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sometimes even my own, even though I felt like it was something, but even sometimes I let myself be skeptical enough to basically, sometimes you gotta miss some, you know what I mean? So even if it was a thing, even I still question it. You know what I mean? Sometimes.
Yeah.
Depends on if it's big enough, if it's loud enough, you know?
Yeah, and I also want to, like, jump into something you said there that really kind of drives home for me how this works is, you said when you were young, you wanted to find the magic and everything. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of us can really relate to that because there very much is this, like, pursuit of wonder, you know? Right. When you have all these questions and you're looking for answers and everything's, like, charged and powerful. How you maintain that is, in my opinion, don't view science like it's boring. Like, I want to just, like, explain a couple things here. Mm. Do you have any idea how fucking wild it is that we even live in the times that we do? Like, sure, you just because your brain can logically understand how aerodynamics work and how a plane works, Do you not think it's magic? Do you not think it's fucking magic that we are flying people in pressurized pieces of metal across the world on fucking refined dinosaur bones? Mm-hmm. Like, how in what realm would you not think that our world is not run by the most powerful fucking technocrats? You know, like, science is a pillar of magic, in my opinion. No, please continue. Agree.
Yeah. I mean, I always, like, in chemistry class in well, chemistry lab in school, you know, have you ever done the make a test tube a mirror?
No.
You use the proper chemicals and you swirl it around and it makes the test tube, the inside of a glass test tube, it makes it a mirror and you can actually see your reflection. I mean, watching chemical compounds, watch two completely cold chemicals come together and start to burn and hiss and fizzle and, you know, I don't know if that's not magic, I don't know what is. You know what I mean? Like,
or even something simple like a lighter or a match. Think about how hard it was to produce flame 2,000 years ago. And you can just take this little piece of plastic and go, boom, you have fire in your fucking hand. What? Do you realize how powerful that is? We have little pieces of rocks in our pocket. These phones, they're like, I don't know, something we charged with energy, and they're like crystals that we just tricked into thinking that somehow we managed to connect our entire world with together so that you can hear our voices fucking all around the world at your own convenience. Like, Jesus Christ, if that's not magic, like, I don't know what the fuck to say, buds. We're living in the times, you know?
I really like what you said, especially in particular when you said, you know, science being cool. You know, it science is a pillar of magic. It science is fascinating and amazing, and yeah.
I don't think that we should ever give up wonder and amazement simply mm-hmm. because we can explain it. Because I'll tell you this, I think magic is just a science we haven't fully figured out yet. Maybe it's not going to be something that you can prove in like a scientific method, air quotations.
Quantifiable way, yeah.
Good magic does attempt to use scientific method. You do try to write it off by all known explanation with our current model, but our model of physics and our understanding of world is so meek. We understand such a fraction that to assert that our worldviews right now somehow encompass the whole picture would be nothing other than arrogant and asinine. So mm-hmm. I think magic can absolutely be explained. It is the science of the future, but it's complex. And it's something that's going to take understanding ourselves. And God knows that's not very fundable by corporate interests. You don't want society to look inward and understand ourselves and empower people. We want things that'll distract us and gadgets that'll amaze us. Anything that would require the science of the self is shunned because it would lead to a revolution of how we treat each other and how we think. And right now the game is about like keeping people in a very specific mindset, right? And I think that so long as we live in the world of the insubstantial, magic will always be pushed into a back seat because it's not profitable. It is not controllable. It's not something that you can file away into a box and have like reins on. You will never tame it. And that's why it scares the establishment. And that's why they want you to not believe in it. And that's why it's not studied. But that doesn't make it any less of a science. And that doesn't make science any less fucking magical and wondrous.
Exactly.
Yeah. Everything of what you guys were saying. This is actually my belief in science and my fascination with science and my belief in science as... or at magic as a branch of science. It's completely how I rationalize being a Satanist and a witch, because being a Satanist with the Satanic Temple, they're an atheistic religion, right? So they don't believe in God, goddesses, gods, you know. And a lot of Satanists with them, they also kind of lump magic into that, and I don't necessarily agree with that particular viewpoint. But the reason that I am still able to rationalize, you know, being a part of this organization plus a practicing witch that 1000% believes in magic as a branch of science is because of one of the tenets of the Satanic Temple. And I'm just going to read it real quick because I think it's really good. So it says, beliefs should conform to our best scientific understanding of the world. We should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit our beliefs. And I think that's just, that really hit home for me. And that's the thing that I use to rationalize pretty much everything, because there are things that science has proven. You know, you drop a piece of paper into the hot candle, it becomes a second. It becomes a second wick. So that's what science has taught us. But there are some things that cannot be explained by, I guess, standard scientific means.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where the realm of magic comes in, the realm of the other. That's where that comes in. And unfortunately, it's like Sophia was saying, like that... like people don't want you to study that because they know it has power. And maybe I'm getting a little tinfoily about it, but people know that it has power, and therefore they don't want to give that knowledge to the public. They don't want that knowledge to be everyone. So that's why I think you have people that are occultists and witches, and we're like, we know that there's something else. We know that there's another branch of science. There's not just chemistry and aerospace and biology. There's something else. There's the other.
The divine science.
Exactly. And there's something there, and it's powerful, and people should have access to it. But unfortunately, it's not, you know.
Well, I'll tell you this. I do know a lot of people who worked in science fields. A lot of them are occultists or practicing witchcraft. They keep their personal beliefs completely the fuck out of their work because they mm-hmm. don't want to get in trouble for it. But yep. I know someone who is an ex-NASA scientist who is also like a grandmaster Kabbalist, right? And he knows his fucking shit. The guy is incredibly smart. And there's tons of people like this who work in fields all across the world who will just keep their personal beliefs dead silent. But there's a lot of occult scientists out there. A lot of them actually really like math. It's either like, I know a lot of mathematicians who have gotten into the occult, and there's like a lot of occultists who have gotten into Hermeticism and then moved into mathematics, right? Because to quote that guy, God bows to numbers. So it's very interesting that you would expect there to be like this hard, hard divide, but a lot of people who've like read quantum theory and studied occult and do these heavy, heavy calculations have some very unique worldviews that fall way outside of the mainstream domain of what you would expect from a scientist. It's not this hard, godless worldview, so to speak.
Yeah, and like you were saying earlier, Sophia, about like a plane, right? Like, I visited my parents in Florida recently, and every time that I'm on a plane, I am filled with a sense of wonder and maybe a little bit of anxiety. Not that I have like the fear of flying, but there's just that little bit of like that nervous energy, that nervous anxiety. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're taking this massive thing full of people and cargo off of a certain point on the ground, and you're flying it. I mean, this was just to Florida, so you're just flying it along the East Coast, but there are planes that are international flights. Like, you're flying it across the world, and you're landing it in the exact precise spot that you're supposed to land it. And I can't, like, I know that I live in the modern day, and I know that, you know, like, the angry ball in the sky is just the sun. And, you know, I know these things, and yet I still can't help but have that feeling that, like, when that plane takes off and then when it lands, I was like, this has to be witchcraft. Like, there's no way that we're able to do this. You know, there's no way that human engineering alone has allowed us to do this. And I know that is the case, but I'm just filled with such a sense of wonder that we're able to do that.
I love that right now, I'm so sorry.
Go ahead.
I love that right now that we are talking about, I don't even know if we mean to or if we even realize we're doing it, but talking about finding the sacred in science, which I don't even know if I've ever heard someone talk about that before.
That's true. Like, I really thought, initially I thought this was going to take more of like a social kind of angle, especially when I kind of open up talking about like how I keep my practice out of my work and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. all at the same time, there's those little moments, like, you know, like Sophia was saying, like, that just kind of like shine through, and they just remind you of your reconnection to everything. So I mean, I guess going into this I really thought that I had my mundane and magical life separate. I don't think I do as much as I thought, now that we're actually talking about science and sort of like the sacredness of it.
The mm-hmm. sacredness of the mundane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've said it before, like, the biggest ritual you cast is your day-to-day life and all the actions you take and the repercussions they wrought on you, you know? Yep. Like, we've talked very much about how, you know, not everything per se is a magical act, but if you intend it to be so, it is. Now, that said, when you take the grand scheme of the choices that you make over your life and the impacts that you make on other people in the world, that's the ritual called you. You know, that's what you did. That's what you wrought and what you brought into the world and what changes you made, you know. Like, I think for me, balancing the mundane and the magical, it isn't about being like out of touch with the mundane or being out of touch with magical, but really trying to find a life where I can foster both at the same time without having to neglect the other. I don't ever stop being friends with someone or appreciating them in their full glory and splendor just because they're not an occultist or into magic. Right. I've met so many people who are like, why would you hang out with people of such a low vibrational value? And it's like, you just straight up judged somebody as inferior to you and asked me why I would hang out with them. I'll tell you why, because they don't do that shit.
Right. I'm not gonna lie, sometimes I really appreciate my friends that aren't occultists, because we can just talk about anything. Not that, you know.
I get to be mundane. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, like I was one of my old high school friends hit me up today, and it was like really Sabrina, great because I haven't
talked to her. At the witch school versus like the regular high school, she can just be like a regular teenager versus like.
Look it up. What's happier? She has been every other fucking witch. She's the only one who's happy with her fucking life.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, DL.
she realizes that this whole thing, and especially like you could talk to. I don't care what tradition.
Don't give me too many spoilers for the current season, though. I haven't watched it yet.
I'm not talking about it. Okay. But no matter what tradition you are, there is always some thought process from in many traditions, in which we are all connected. We are as much a part of nature as nature is, you know, a part of us, and we are all connected to each other in some grand way. And I really think because of that, because we are spiritual beings, it furthermore, you know, as above, so below, as so the universe, so the soul, right? And more than that, you know, so the soul, so the body too. You know, our body is sacred. The physical world, the mundane world, is still a sacred experience. So when a scientist makes a discovery that's, you know, he had will and intention, he set out and put in hours of study, reading books and, you know, big dry textbooks and talking with colleagues about this and running tests, it sounds like magic to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
When we intentionally create something, that is a miraculous work. We are spiritual. Just like, you know, and this might be hard to see it this way because it's not, you know, it could be ugly and it could be harsh, but I mean, even the harsh reality of nature, you know, it could be harrowing and awe-inspiring and it hurts, but even those, you know, acts of nature can be, like I said, awe-inspiring, you know? And then on top of that, you know, there are peaceful things too. You know, peaceful things that it does, clean air and everything else, you know? It's all one thing in some way.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of how we're talking about, like, science and stuff like that, I can't help but think about this, like, coronavirus thing that everyone's talking about right now. And just for context, it's March 4th, the day of this recording. So, but because I don't know what, you know, this will get posted a while from now. But I can't help but think about that, you know, because there seems to be like two camps when it comes to it, where there's, you know, oh my God, it's terrible and we're all gonna die and it's gonna be, you know, a plague. And then there's the other camp that's like, okay, let's rationalize this, you know, take preventative measures. If you feel sick, go to the doctor. A lot of the people that are getting sick are already sick or older, and they're already kind of compromised. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they're kind of taking the more, it's definitely a bad virus, don't get me wrong, but you have to look at all the facts. I'm definitely in that camp when it comes to it. Because I just view that as more of the witchy way, actually, like the fear-mongering kind of thing. Just it doesn't feel like that's the way to approach something like that. And because I know that there are people, there are scientists and doctors and whoever else works on vaccines, you know, there is a whole team of people that specialize in that particular part of their profession, and they are working to figure out a solution, very much like how, like, when someone comes to you and they're like, I think I might be like fucking really cursed, and you're like, okay, you know, let's figure this out. I just view it as very much the same work, but by freaking out about a curse or freaking out about whatever it may be, just makes that thing that much worse. Mm-hmm. And I think about that. So I think by everyone putting a lot of this energy into this, you know, the coronavirus is going to kill everyone, I think what a lot of people are doing collectively, they're doing a massive you know, kind of spell in a way to make it that much worse.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for fucking saying that, because I've been trying to drive this home to people for so long, and I don't know how to get it across that giving into despair directly only benefits negative results. You're never gonna get something good. Another thing I could tie that to is like what's going on with the American primaries. Yes, I'm the Canadian who knows more about American news than most Americans, so I'm sure that you know what's going on with like a whole bunch of people dropping out, and it's basically now down to Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And everybody on Bernie camp is doomsday. No, Warren's the only person who hasn't dropped out, because she's splitting the progressive vote, and she's our only one of our Hail Mary fucking hopes in hell is that she comes out to endorse Bernie, but we'll see. That's a big fucking if. Anyways, everybody's wanting to act alarmist like it's done right now, like they didn't expect Super Tuesday to be as bad as it was. And yeah, it was worse than a lot of people hoped. Bernie lost a lot of states that they thought were shoo-ins for him, right? But by like giving into despair, guess what? They've won. If you start despairing, you're not going to do anything proactive. You're not going to do anything other than give up, give in, and roll over. It's the same thing that's happening with climate change right now. We're doomed. There's nothing we can do. Everybody wants to throw in the fucking towel, roll over, and die. That is the antithesis of making anything good happen or making any positive change. Right. All of our climate change scientists are saying, no, we're not fucked. It's going to suck, but we got to deal with it. And if you think that we're just fucked, that actually worsens the problem, because the more we keep just saying it's bad, there's nothing we can do, the more we keep making excuses and the worse it keeps getting. We got to own the fuck up and start going at that stuff instead of just like throwing our hands up in the air and being like, well, I guess we're done now. You know, it's the same thing across the board, whether it's panicking about coronavirus or whether it's giving up on a political movement that could literally save fucking thousands of people's lives every year. You know, like you giving into despair doesn't do anything. And I really wish if we were to have one message that could ever come out of this episode, by God, people, be aware of how much power your thoughts and emotions have. Because if everybody was cognizant of it, we'd have a different world right now. We would not be living in this mess. We would have people standing up, speaking up, and organizing together. But because we think that everything's hopeless, guess what it is? Because whether you believe it's whether you believe that you can or you can't, you've made it happen, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like once you set that precedent, you know, like, I mean, and I'm not perfect either, because when I did read about, you know, the kind of like the turnout from Super Tuesday, I was like, oh, man, we're fucked. Like, that was my first, you know, thought. And I was like, no, like, there's still more primaries coming up. That's there not is. The end all be all.
We haven't voted yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm itching to get out there and vote, and I know who I'm putting my vote behind. And
the one fact that everybody's not touching on, it's fucking Joe Biden. He's barely cognizant of what's going on. He's gonna get destroyed the moment it's in a 1v1. Watch, it's gonna be funny.
Yeah, I hope people like see that. You know what I mean? Like, if it comes down to that, I hope people see that and they're like, oh, this guy's a real kind of. It's not all there. I hope that that's what happens, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's beyond that. It's like he has a bad track record and all that stuff. But we're not going to make this like a
American but also look at our president right now. So you know what I mean? America sucks. I'm just with saying, side
with Bernie, he's going to get fucking minced. And just wait for it. It's going to be a delicious treat. Anyways, for
the politics. Not to get on a super political tangent, it's just, it's very, it's a hot button topic right now.
Yeah, and to be clear, we do get very political in this episode, but talking politics is different than being political.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I would say that I think I'm correct in saying we are all left-leaning here.
Yeah. Oh my God. I me over here with my free health care. I really wish
I'm probably the most centrist of us all, probably.
Yep.
Yeah, probably. Jay, I'm pretty sure you're not a centrist because you believe that nobody should you believe that housing is a human right, I've heard you say.
Yeah. Yes. I've heard you say
that food.
I think I just
that puts you really fucking far left on America.
I am very pretty far much left. Like,
you are.
I am very far left. I think I have a stronger tolerance for listening to the other side.
That's probably what it is you can put with it and they think that you're one of them because you kind of like you could maybe be it. But dude, policy on here's a thing too that I was gonna that we can touch on. People are really bad at misidentifying labels in all kinds of contexts. Mm-hmm. A lot of people mm-hmm. who say I'm centrist or conservative, when you boil it down to the per point issues, you're actually more bleeding heart liberal than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think I'm able to like just listen to the other side, and sometimes they make good points about certain things, and I'm able to kind of like pull.
It sounds like you've got a good tolerance for bullshit.
just some, not like the hot button issues, but like sometimes people make up a good point, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's a good point, but I still believe what I believe. And
I know what you mean.
Yeah, but anyway, to get away from politics, and kind of back into the topic. I really like where this discussion has gone because I really thought we were going to keep it separate. Like we were going to actually talk about the separation between the two, and it actually really turned into more of us talking about the intersection of the magic and the mundane. And that actually makes me feel a lot better because I think I realized that I do have more magical moments in my mundane life than I really thought so before. And that makes me feel good because I don't wear an amulet or a pentacle every day to work. One reason is because I just haven't, I don't have good quality chains. I actually just bought some sterling silver ones, so I have to restring my stuff, or not sterling silver, stainless steel.
Good, stainless steel ones. Fucking easy for chains. Sorry, just
bent. Yeah, but my skin's really sensitive to like really cheap metals. Stuff like that, so I'll like break out. So if I break out, then I can't wear it for a while. It just kind of bothers me. I actually really wanted to look into maybe just switching to like hemp rope.
I know what I need. I need a fucking titanium chain. That's what I need.
Titanium's good. Stainless steel is good for me too.
Oh, dude, no, I can. You have to understand. It's me. I don't have the wards set up, so my amulet takes more hits than anything else. Not to mention just like my casual things. I need a fucking titanium.
Oh, you're talking about like the strength of the material.
The tensile. Okay, look. So
I thought you meant like skin reaction. Like for me,
let me bring this up. Another thing that ties into enchantments is what type of materials you like to house them in. So if you've tried to use any long-term pentagram that you're wearing, certain stuff over time just kind of falls apart, just kind of breaks. It just like over that, like that, it's done, you know? And when you're really doing a long-time enchantment, you need good fucking materials because it's almost like spells have a degradation effect, especially something like a protective amulet. So like when it's taking hits, the first thing to break is the goddamn chain. There's nothing that's going to break on the pendant itself. It's solid as fuck. But like the chain, it's compromisable. And I am a goddamn bull. Like I could just like grab this chain and yank on my neck and I could just shatter the chain and my neck would be fine. Right? So it's really easy to break shit on me. So if I were to get a titanium one, it mitigates all risk of that breaking and it helps keep everything locked in, right? If you physically can't keep your necklace tied around your neck, it's probably not going to do you a lot of good for keeping you enchanted. And if you keep it in your pocket, well, you might fucking lose it, right? So it's kind of the advantage of getting tattoos sometimes. They're always with you.
Yeah, I do want to get some magical tattoos, but I'm kind of waiting to get any tattoos that I want, like post-op surgery.
We could sneak you a little pentagram in just underneath your left ass cheek, like right where nobody works.
Yeah, that's a good place.
Like a little sneaky little cheeky pentagram.
Yeah.
Oh, you could even call it your sneaky cheeky pentagram.
Oh my god, this is perfect. I think Scott knows what their first tattoo is going to be.
Oh god.
I'll get Darian to do it for you.
Oh, right. Parents of the nation, look out. The new thing that the queers are doing these days is putting sneaky pentagrams cheeky where the sun don't shine. If you find a kid with the pentagram between their legs, they're praying to Satan, God damn it, and you need to get them cleansed.
Let me get a hail, Satan. Yeah, I don't know how we got into butt cheek tattoos, but this is where this is at now. Oh no, we were talking about magical tattoos and amulets and stuff.
Sneaking charms in.
But yeah, for like me, and that's another thing too, about finding like skepticism. That's another thing about skepticism. So like for me with like chains, right, and material, like whatever, like kind of jewelry, I break out really easily from cheaper metals. So you know, I buy like stainless steel is fine, but I do prefer like sterling silver or like 14 karat gold, but that's expensive. So, you know, you make do with what you have. Some people would interpret like, oh, I put on my necklace and, you know, it made my skin break out. So someone must have cursed it or I didn't cleanse it properly. It's like, no, maybe your skin is just sensitive to that material and you should use a different kind of chain to hang that, to hang the pendant. Like I used to have this pendant, it was pewter, and where it would sit, like, because I would wear it under my, I would wear it under my shirt, and this was like in college. I went to a Catholic university, so I didn't always have the pentagram out in public, but I would have it under my shirt, so it would sit against my chest, just my skin, and then just from sweating and rubbing and stuff like that, I would have this horrible just like rash. And I'm like, man, what is going on? And I'm like, it's me. It's just like I can't have this particular material up against my skin all day. So yeah, it's like, I, you know, like we were saying earlier, just use your best rational mind first for a lot of things.
I think there's like also a lot more angles on this that we really could kind of dive into. Like, what does it really mean to balance the mundane and the magic, right? Like, here's one question. How much is it healthy to focus on occult stuff? Have you ever been like with friends and have them be like, fuck, do you talk about anything other than witchcraft?
Yeah,
it kind of sucks, and it's not fun feeling like you're a one-dimensional person, you know. And as cool yeah. as it is for me to like feel like I could be that witch in the woods, people coming yeah. at me with their problems, and you got to give me a secret for me to give you a secret, or like shit like that, or just make weird deals that fuck with people's head for no good reason. Like, I could do that shit, and I could be like that witch, but like, that's not healthy. It's really not healthy for anybody.
I try and be the practical witch. Like, I actually have a funny story about that.
Yeah?
About, so our D&D group, it's actually on Sundays now, even though it was originally supposed to be Saturdays. So I thought that was funny, Sophia, how you were like, Sundays are the only day you're supposed to do D&D. And I was like, no, Saturdays are the day, and now it's Sundays. just because of scheduling, it got moved to Sundays. But anyway, so the group is me, Joyce, our friend Rick, and his stepbrother and his cousin, Todd and Justin. And they are a little bit younger than us, like 18. I think Todd's like 21. So we're a good 8 to 9 years you know, ahead of them, which at this age is kind of far. You know, you've had different life experiences at that point. So we're a little bit older than these two guys. And I couldn't be any more obvious. Like when I talk about like, oh, you know, like when Scott, I had to burn down the rest of the candles after we did that ritual. Mm-hmm. It was our D&D day the next day. And they're like, oh, what's that? I was like, oh, I'm burning candles from this ritual I did last night. And I just left it at that because it's the answer to the question. They didn't ask me more questions and I didn't really feel the need to go into detail. So I just right. make it very apparent. And like I have a broom hanging on my wall and I talk about being a witch, you know, enough, you know, for, I just put it into yeah. regular conversation. It's just very much a part of my life. Plus, I'm like, you're in my house. I'm not hiding anything. You know, you can go up in the back bedroom and take a look for yourself. So the one yeah. day I'm doing dishes in the kitchen and Justin comes over and he's like, so what's with the broom? And I'm like, well, the broom, it's like a symbol to like protect the home. And I was just kind of like explaining what the broom does. It can banish negativity, like it sweep away the negativity. And he's like, oh, so who's the witch? Like, he was, like, trying to – I guess he thought it was, like, a decoration. No, that's what it was. He was like, what's with the broom? Who's the witch? And then I went into a discussion and I was like, both me and Joyce are practicing witches. And he was like, oh, really? I'm like, dude, like, have you not, like, paid any attention to the past, like, month, 2 months that you've been coming over to my house? Oh my god, it made me laugh. It was just a really funny exchange. And so, like, you know, I kind of was, like, talking about the broom stuff. He's like, oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I'm like, yeah, it's my life. And then the other guy, Todd, he came in. And he was like, so what does the broom do again? And, like, he got really interested. And turns out his girlfriend is a practicing witch. So
cool.
Joyce actually met her when Joyce was working a seasonal job at GameStop. They came in and Joyce was telling them about, like, pagan pride and stuff. So, yeah, I just thought that was a really funny thing. And especially, like, for me, who I really don't talk about witchcraft all that much. I can definitely say that I've never been in a situation where someone was like, yo, like, do you have any other interests? I really don't talk about it all that much. I kind of just, if it's relevant to the conversation, I'll slip it in, I'll make a point, but I don't really launch into much detail. And so for me to have so many opportunities in these conversations, I mean, like, we're playing fucking D&D. It's very, like, and then on non-D&D days, we play Magic the Gathering. So it's very, like, you know, fantasy-themed anyway. So there's just opportunities for me to say things regarding witchcraft, and the fact that he was just completely oblivious to it. I was like, I literally am burning candles for a ritual that I did the other day, and you just completely glossed over that.
I think in, like, my life, how I strike a balance is really like this. If it's relevant to bring up, I might say something like this. Say we're watching a movie and, like, a demon name comes up, like, say, Malphus. I'll be like, oh, that's a goetic demon. And, like, I'll just, like, leave it at that. I don't, like, dive into giving them the associations or, like, what his rank of hell is.
That's, like, me when I watch Sabrina.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's different if I'm, like, sitting down watching Sabrina with my girlfriend and I want to point out all the witchcraft to her. That's a little different, right? But, like,
I'm watching it for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, same. That's, like, Sabrina's a completely different fucking ballpark. Like, that show is written by a ton of witches. Probably, but we, like, still want you to finish to, like, season 3, Jay, so we can do an episode about
it. I know.
You bad motherfucker.
Sophia's gonna beat the shit out of me if I don't watch Sabrina.
I will just verbally accost you, is what I will do. Ooh, I will just verbally accost you. Anyways. But, like, in my day-to-day life, I almost never talk about magic with people. Like, if people ask me about my pentagram, or, like, if I know that they're into it, we'll have those conversations as they naturally come up. Mm-hmm. If my friends are, like, atheists, I'll never bring it up with them. Mm-hmm. If they're, if, like,
sometimes atheist religion, friends can be a bit more annoying than, like,
religious friends.
Christian friends.
I actually, this is going to sound bad, I don't have any Christian friends. I have friends of every different religion in the world. The one group I can't get along well with is Christians and Catholics, as an ex-Catholic, right? It's just too much of a fucking sore wound.
I can't
tolerate 75% of Christians and Catholics I meet, and I apologize to anybody who's offended by that. It's nothing personal. It's just a trauma scar. Right.
No, I generally don't vibe with them either, especially Christians that are actual Christians, and, like, they go to church, and, you know, like, they actually.
I don't even know what the fucking actual Christian means. I don't even mean, like, oh, I'm Catholic. So many people say, oh, we're actual Christians. That's a whole fucking episode.
I guess, like, practicing Christians, because another thing that I tend to find with Christians and Catholics is that, like, someone's like, yeah, I'm Catholic. I'm like, oh, like, oh, cool. Like, what church do you go to? Oh, I don't go to church. Or, like, you know what I mean? Like, they couldn't tell you a single thing about the Bible.
What kills me is, like, they claim to be Christian or Catholic, yet me as a practicing witch have read more of the Bible, understand more of Christ's teachings and live actually according to the fucking tenets of your religion better than you do, and I don't even follow it.
That's the kind of person that pisses me off. That's the one that I don't really vibe with. I think I have some that are Christian. I think maybe more acquaintances and coworkers than I would say like friends. Maybe. I'm not sure. Or it just doesn't really come up. But yeah, I definitely feel you on that.
I have friends of like literally every other religion out there. We just will jive great and nobody pushes anything on each other. It's only when you get those like really dogmatic Christians who try to push shit on people that it doesn't work. Like, I treat my witchcraft very much like it's a religion. I'm not going to talk about it with people who don't believe it. Why the fuck would I be talking about magic spells I'm doing with someone who the whole time is just going to be like, yeah, right, whatever. That's not a good exchange. It's not healthy. That's just...
Plus, it sucks the magic out of your magic.
And it's like, it's not worth it for anybody. It's you not respecting their space of what you have out of the friendship. So, like, most people I almost never talk about magic with ever. And I, like, have these conversations here. Or in DKMU. Or with my friends who do. Because, like, there's people for that. It'd be like... Try not to talk about queer issues with your fucking straight grandma. Yeah, exactly. And I think that fucking just sums the whole thing up.
Yeah. I can actually kind of remember, Sophia, like one of our first conversations that led into magic and witchcraft and the occult. I don't remember specifically what led into it or what we were talking about. I really have no clue what the segue was, but all I remember hearing is like this genuine like happiness in your voice, because it was just through voice chat that we were talking through PS4 chat, and you could just tell you were like, you're like me, you know, like you could almost hear it like in your voice. You're like, oh shit, this is great. You were genuinely like surprised.
Dude, the amount of fucking legit witches I will come across from like people who claim to be witches, it's like 1 in fucking 10.
Yeah, especially now that maybe I don't know if maybe this requires a whole other episode on it, but yeah, maybe in an aesthetic discussion. But people who people who are feminists, but they use the term witch and feminist interchangeably.
Oh my god, yes, let's do an episode on that. I have had a fucking gripe about that.
Yeah,
okay, so we are allowed to gripe aesthetic about that, and it's just, not okay.
Just because you're feminist, don't make you a witch. Sorry, that's I said it. You can fight me about it. Come to my social media. We'll throw the gloves off. We'll have a talk.
You can catch I'll hug these you. Hands.
I'll tell you it's okay. No, we'll
these digital catch these hands
on the keyboard typing you nice things.
How you are wrong. No.
Well, I mean, I will politely show you some correct information.
I won't politely wreck you. No.
That's me.
I got plenty of room to be a cutthroat bitch. This is not one of those situations.
Definitely not. I always fuck with Joyce all the time. Like, we'll be talking about something that we have a different opinion on, and I'll be like, listen, I know your opinion is wrong, but like, hear me out. And they're like, fuck you.
Very true. Darian
gets mad when I do that too, because I was like, you're entitled to your wrong opinion.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm over here just like constantly trying to help both sides see each other's side, because I'm the fucking middle child, and I even deliver my talk in the beginning and the middle, because the being in the middle is like the fucking theme of my life in a nutshell. So I'm like the negotiator. No, like Malcolm in the Middle, when I saw that, I was like, oh fuck, it's like they're making a show about my life. And I never watched it because of that. I'm like, I don't need to watch a show about this shit. I live with it.
I lived it. I don't need to see a TV
show. I don't need you to tell me how unfair it is to be a fucking middle child. I know. God damn.
I don't try very hard. It just kind of works. I don't really have to do anything in particular. I just kind of feel like I'm a witch 100% of the time, but I'm also, like, a human person, and I go through a lot of bullshit, and witchcraft helps me handle and cope. It's all very organic. I mean, 17 years of magical practice. I don't know. Maybe that's it. When I was in high school, maybe I relied on it too much. Maybe.
I would agree with that.
No, definitely relied on it too much. I thought it made me, like, invincible. Yeah, so in high school, like, young high school, freshman, sophomore, I thought it, like, made me invincible. And I think I kind of started changing around come, like, junior year. Just a little bit I started changing. Kind of, like, getting kind of that realism, you know? As I get older, I don't know. Like, I pick situations where I actually think spell work is necessary and... You know, instead of trying to throw a spell at every situation that didn't go my way, sometimes, I don't know, like, it's just like, well, maybe this doesn't really, you know, this isn't that important, you know, like, just do the mundane stuff, you know, and then if you stress all the mundane stuff, then go for the magic. And even that, it's all very organic for me. I don't really have to set, like, I don't have to intentionally do anything to make it work. Like together with my quote-unquote real life and my magical life, they just all kind of, they're just
Do you ever feel like there's an imbalance?
I see what you mean. Yeah, totally. Now, unfortunately, I never, when I was younger, the imbalance always used to be with magic, right? My head was always in the clouds and off in the spirit realm, and, you know, what spell can I cast next? What kind of magical experience can I get myself into? Nowadays, now that I'm older, it's this grounded kind of imbalance where I'm not feeding my spirits enough, or I'm not meditating, or I'm not, like, literally just kind of letting my magic grow stale, you know? Like, I mean, I have old potions sitting on my window ledge right now that I really need to clean out their bottles and throw away. They're stale and they're old and I haven't done it. But that is unfortunate. That's why tonight I was so pleased with how well I did a working tonight for our audience, and it worked real. It was so wonderful to feel that pitched energy and you know, it felt good to get back in the swing of things. It was the first real spell that I've, you know, really went into, and I'm utilizing some of the workings from the books that I'm reading, those of which, for our viewers, you can see in a post I just posted today. On our Instagram, you can see what I'm reading. I was using some of those books to help me cleanse my room and stuff. And it felt really wonderful. Like, I was, like, feeling things moving when I was using my broom to thrash the air and get rid of things. And it felt, you know, it feels good to be in my practice. But too often, I end up just reading books. And I know a lot about magic. I'm very knowledgeable about herbs and their medicinal properties and their magical properties and folklore and, you know, stupid things like, if, you know, the devil ever scares you, you can cut him in half with a piece of straw. Like, I know really stupid random bits of folklore like that, but I forget to actually practice magic sometimes because of the mundane world, and this doesn't take away anything that I said. You know, everything is connected, mundane is sacred, but sometimes, like Jay and Sophia have said, you have to learn to balance it out. And I know that that's a struggle for me.
I was gonna say, because, like, I asked that question in the phrasing of, do you struggle to balance the mundane with magic, and you went at a full magic mindset on that, not to, like, put you on the spot or anything, but you didn't really talk about how much of a, or any, you didn't really even talk about too much mundane stuff there. You talked about how the mundane affects your practice, but it still came back to your practice.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think when I was younger, I leaned too heavily on the spiritual side of things, because, like I said, like I've said before in previous episodes, my background was very Wiccan. That's kind of where I got into witchcraft. So it was, Wicca is very spiritual, very religious, dogmatic, I think that's the word I'm looking for. There's a lot of dogma in it. So I think I relied more so on that, and that was to kind of emulate my Christian friends, you know, like, well, I have my beliefs, and I didn't really focus too much on the witchcraft. I didn't really focus too much on the spells. Now, as an adult, I am much more results focused, so I have way less dogma in my life, and you know, I've really come to believe in the fact that, you know, no gods, only spirits, that kind of thing. So I have way less dogma that's holding me down or influencing me, and I have way more witchcraft, like actual spells. Like, oh, I want to do this, I'm going to do a spell. I want to do this, I'm going to do a spell. Now, that's not saying I do spells all the time. I really, because of my mundane life, like my, I would give you, like, here's my idea of like my schedule during a week is like, so I leave my house at 8 o'clock and I don't get back until 5:30 to 6, because that whole time I'm just at work. So I can't really be casting a whole lot of spells at work and doing like really intense witchcraft work. So that's that whole block of time that's taken up. And then by the time I get home, I don't know, I try and usually eat around like between 7 and 8 o'clock, eat some dinner. And then that's just, and then, you know, if I have like a bunch of laundry to do or put away or clean my bathroom or like run the vacuum, you know, just like regular, mundane, normal shit, you know, that could take up until, I don't know, another hour. So 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. And then really, I really try and go to bed by like between 11 and midnight, depending on how tired I am. And there's it just feels like there's no goddamn time when I get home from work. Cause either, or like I'm editing an episode of the podcast, and then editing an episode of the podcast means I have to listen to the entire thing again. So if we recorded an hour and 40 minutes worth of content, it probably takes me about 2 hours and 40 minutes with all the stopping and cutting and stuff like that. And it's not just a complaint, it's the state of my life right now. That's my schedule. So it's hard to have the energy, I think is what it is. It's not that I don't want to do spells, it's not that I don't want to read, and it's not that I don't want to do the work, it's that I'm so exhausted by the time I get the time to do the work. And I think that's the problem that I've been having lately with the balance of it all, is the time management.
Yeah, I feel that.
And the energy. Not so much the time management, which I guess the time management and having the energy to put into it.
Mm-hmm. I guess if I could talk about my end a little bit, there's one thing I wanted to get into, because I was saying in our chat beforehand that, like, I can't really talk about balancing magic and mundane without talking about a very closely held concept to me, which is fate. Hands up, has anybody in this group ever tried to get out of magic before?
Once I got into it, you mean?
Yeah, like, has anybody but me tried to, like, give the craft the fuck up?
No.
No.
No? Mm-hmm. I tried a couple times. Mm. Because I had a lot of shit go down in my in my life. It was one time when I was really young, I had to give it up because my mom made me. And then when I got older, ironically, it was, like, early transition, I met people who didn't really jive with my magic that well, and I wanted to give up my magic and my gifts and all the crazy bullshit that's come in my way to be with them. I wanted to just have a normal life, and I couldn't get away from it. Everything fucked up harder, and there was no way to ever get out at this point, I'm starting to realize. And I know that might sound weird to some people, like, why would you want to get out? But, like, when you go a long way down the rabbit hole and you've been practicing very intense stuff for a long time, you might find yourself a little deeper in than you're comfortable with sometimes. And you might long for the comforts of a normal life, the ability to just go off and marry and date whoever you want, because you don't have some fate that you're called to do. You don't have some greater purpose that you're living your life for. There's to me, the concept of fate is it's like a trade-off. If you have fate, it's similar to will. It's something that you're trying to enact, or you have this potential to do. When you have will and fate, it allows you to do really intense stuff. Like, I should be dead. I've been through so many near accidents and been through so much that it's nearly impossible that I could even exist right now, but I'm here. And it's hard not to feel like that's fate sometimes, you know? But at the same time, I can't ever live an average everyday life. It will never ever work for me. I do not get that freedom, right? So it's like, when you have fate, it's like you have a calling in life. You have something that you're incarnate to do, but at the same time, it costs you. And it's neither good nor bad. It's not bad to have no fate. And it's not a good thing to have fate either. And honestly, sometimes it would be very nice to be able to just not care and live the life of somebody who didn't have to think about all this stuff all the time. But you play the cards that you get dealt, right? And I understand that. And we all have roles to play in things. But I don't know. I feel like sometimes when you're trying to balance magic in the mundane, you might want to try and just throw it all in the bucket and get the fuck out. Whether it's, you know, you see your friend get possessed and you lose your shit, or maybe a seance scares you. You know, I'm pretty sure it's not that uncommon for a lot of people who've really dug into their practice to have a moment where they want to get out of it. You know, and I don't think that's a topic that we discuss too much as a witchcraft community. There's always like, oh, how did you find it? But never, when did you falter? When did you run? When were you afraid, you know? And I think it's a very real discussion that should be had a little bit more, you know?
I definitely agree with that. Like I said, there's never been a time in my craft that I wanted to get out of it or not do it anymore. But I did always used to say, and I know it sounds problematic now, but I always used to say this as I was younger, like maybe like late teens, early 20s, was I wish I was born stupid. And what I meant by that was, yeah, I wish I didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, I wish I didn't know the things that I know. I wish I didn't have the drive to learn things. Sometimes I wish I didn't have the pull to witchcraft and the occult. Sometimes I wish I didn't, you know, like that these things that were naturally a part of me. Sometimes I wish I didn't have these things. You know, I didn't have these things that make up me.
That's an old quote. Ignorance is bliss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes I feel like that now, but I think the older I get and the more that I've kind of resigned myself to my fate. You know what I mean? Like, I've resigned myself to the idea that I'm always going to think differently than most people that I encounter. And so to combat that, I have to surround myself with like-minded or semi-like-minded people. So that way I still have like mental stimulation in conversation, because there's no way that I could maintain quality relationships with people that their whole lives were just, yep, I went to work and then I went out to the bar with my friends and then got really drunk, haha, called an Uber home and, well, now I'm hungover at work the next day. Like, I couldn't, I wouldn't know what to do with that kind of conversation. I'd be like, oh, okay. You know, there's just no substance. So Yeah, it's really important for me to resign myself to my fate of being, I guess, having the witch blood, as we talked about before, as being down that path. I'm grateful. I'm resigned to the fate that I will never walk the path that they're on. But I'm also grateful that I've realized that, because it's helped me just get over myself in a lot of ways. I don't have to sit here and struggle and feel like I'm a prisoner in my own brain because I can't express myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, of course I felt the whole ignorance is bliss thing, you know, and for me, that has a lot even more like on an emotional level too, just because growing up I was in a learning disability problem growing up. And I always thought that I was really unable to be educated. I thought I was very unsmart. And when I realized that, you know, hey, I can learn, maybe slowly, but I can, I have, you know, a willing spirit, and I like to try to learn as much as I can, and I like being educated, and I like knowing things, you know. It is true, I think, that ignorance is bliss. It's, you know, it, like, I remember when I wasn't really interested in politics, before, when I was too young to realize the implication and how much it would eventually affect my life. You know, I realize that I'm probably a little bit more, like, you know, it's one more thing to be stressed about. You know, I pay attention and I try to understand as much as possible, but it is stressful to be aware.
Yeah, I get overwhelmed too. Joyce is really into politics, and I'm like, it's just too much for me to follow along with everything else that I have to do in a day. Right. And I know that sounds like a cop out, but like, I try to my best ability to get the big picture of everything that's going on, but the finer nuances and the details, it's too much for me.
And I mean, you know, like, right. And I mean, I understand, you know, but for me, it's emotional, right? Like, I get emotional burnout really easily. And, you know, I'm scared for my fellow mankind, you know, I'm scared for animals and plants and trees in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm scared.
There's too much at stake.
Yeah. You know, like, I want to see Venice before it's underwater. You know what I mean? Like, and I think about that stuff, and I think about how now it's all politics, right? You know, not to keep talking about politics. It's just, it's easy to talk about this through you talking about that. But, I have at times felt the weight of knowledge. But one thing has stuck out with me, learning about some of the traditional Wiccan mystery traditions, and, you know, and I've mentioned it 100 times on here in the earlier posts about, or at least I've mentioned it at least once, in initiation into, some traditional Wiccan circles, and this may not even be used anymore, but at least at one time they used to ask you, will you suffer to learn? And I think that that's exactly, possibly, of course, I'm not initiated into traditional Wicca, but it would make sense that, you know, the weight of knowledge, you know, because witchcraft really forces you to learn about a lot of things. I mean, anatomy, you know, like, if you're trying to cast a healing spell, you should probably know exactly what you're healing, how that thing works, and, you know, how it should heal properly, you know, etc. You know, so for some of us, it's astronomy, learning the movements of planets. You know, you have to, you know, there's a lot to learn, and it's a lot to remember, and it's a lot to, you know, and but I can honestly say that I don't think I've ever wanted to not practice. I've been scared. Magic has scared the living hell out of me. I was going to drop an F-bomb, but I decided against it. But it has scared the living shit out of me.
You can. This is explicit. It's fine.
I know, but still.
Have you listened to how much I fucking swear? I make the explicit rating for everybody in the podcast.
I know. I just feel like I'm being
segment.
I'm being trying to be my heart-centered self, so you know, I'm just trying to be empathetic, I guess.
I gotcha.
But even when I was scared, and in a way I wanted to run, but more like I wanted to bury myself under a pile of like horseshoes and like hagstones. I was scared of someone. Without going into too much detail, Jay, you know that story. Sophia, I don't even know if I've got the chance to tell you. Or Sophia rather. I don't know if it's anyway. I was very scared of someone. When it came to magic, and this person really made me believe in magic, almost to a point to where I'm like, I'm not sure what's real. You know, it was a very surreal experience, and it was very scary. But I never wanted to run. In some way, it just, in the end, fueled me to get better. It fueled me to exist in my own power, to not cower at the hands of anyone, whether that be another sorcerer or, you know, a horrible boss.
It was your classic case of you said, hey, universe, prove it to me.
Yeah.
And it did. And you were like, oh, fuck. Prove it to me less hard. Please.
That, you know, but it's funny because this was almost the second time. The first time was almost not even... you know what? One of these days for the viewers, I will ask the friend of mine who was there for the second part of this particular journey, and I will ask her if it's okay if I tell an edited version of this harrowing tale that I went through as a young witch. That would be great,
actually, because I have heard this story. And I think, one, it's just a good story from a story perspective. But two, the fact that it is 100% real, it's a really good life lesson and a good lesson for all witches out there, most definitely.
But I've never wanted to run or flee the craft. But also, too, once again, from a not-so-great person in my life, but unfortunately sometimes not-so-great people can give you some great wisdom. Someone once said to me, use it or it'll use you. And that was in accordance with or talking about my psychic ability, my mediumship. And considering I view my magic and my mediumship as the same thing. I never wanted to be eaten alive by it. I wanted to make sure that I was its master and it wasn't mine. Because, like Sophia says, I mean, I haven't always, you know, like I said, when I was young, I didn't have this control and I was scared and nervous and I would know things about people. I had a lot more clarity, I would say, when I was younger, but that's pretty normal. But I would, you know, my psychic hits were crazy when I was young. And sometimes you knew things about people that you really didn't want to know, you know, walking past people and, you know, walking past possessed people, people with like hardcore attachments. It was, you know, but like I said, I wanted to become stronger. I wanted to be that person that someone could be like, I am scared. Like, my bed is floating in the middle of the night. Can you please help me? And I wanted to be able to go in there and lay that spirit and be like, this house is clean, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. You wanted to just, you wanted to use your power for good.
Yeah, I really did. I thought it was one more way to help other people. And then eventually, as I got older, I started to realize, hey, this can help me too, you know? And I started using my witchcraft as self-empowerment and, you know, to kind of try to be a lighthouse of peace, which worked for a long time. People always used to tell me, you know, you're like a walking Xanax is one of my favorite. When you walk in a room, that's I just great. Feel better. You know, people used to say that to me all the time. And I was like, oh, lucky you. I wish I had that effect on myself. But that's what I wanted. I wanted to be that for other people. And then I realized I needed to be that for myself. And here I am now. I have the, you know, finally had the strength to put myself in therapy and, you know, take it seriously and heal from my own traumas and go through that shadow work. So, I don't know, I guess, and, you know, I didn't want to let fear be the mind killer, as they say.
So, we're going to wrap it up here. We are on the big three social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our handle is witchesbetwixt, and that's all one word, all lowercase, on all three platforms. We welcome messages on all of those platforms. We check all of them except for Twitter, which is pretty much exclusively run by me. If you want to add your post to our online community, use the hashtag WBTWXT. And the links to our official Facebook group and website are in the show notes below. And yeah, I think we will see everyone in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Don't forget to banish.